there are people personally that I have known, that have gone to commit suicide because of the seriousness of how they receive what the church is giving them as kids. And then they come around and find that this self-deprivation that they are having to live through every single day of their life is something they can't take anymore. So it is crazy to me to see that I'm still getting email after email from people all over the country who are telling me, I'm 19 years old, I can't deal with this, my dad's a preacher, and, you know, talking about suicide attempts, how do they come to terms with who they are? This is hard, I think, for people outside of the Christian world to understand, as, you know, people who have not been exposed to how serious this gets, that it is an issue that, especially for me now coming out, me now telling my story, that I have been inundated with the stories of young men all over the country who even today are still dealing with this and who, you know, are attempting to take their lives.
The Feast of Fools is brought to you by Big Love from HBO, a bold new dramatic series that explores the complicated life of a modern-day polygamist.
Big Love. Polygamy loves company.
Sundays at 10 p.m., 9 central, immediately following The Sopranos, only on HBO.
And The Feast of Fools is also brought to you by listeners like you.
Thank you for your support.
Here we go. Isn't it familiar? Hadn't had someone to talk to in such a long time. And it's strange all we have in common. And your company was just the thing I needed tonight. But somehow I feel I should apologize, 'cause I'm just a little shaken by what's going on inside. I should go before my will gets any weaker and my eyes begin to linger longer than they should. I should go before I lose my sense of a reason and this hour holds more meaning than it ever could. I should go.
You're listening to The Feast of Fools, a podcast in touch with its roots. On today's show, we're going to be talking to singer-songwriter Levi Christ about his brand new album, One of the Ones. You're listening to I Should Go, which is the first track on that album. We're going to be talking about his roots in Southern Baptist, growing up gay in Tennessee, his album, his music,
his relationship with Matthew McConaughey
and Bill Paxton from HBO, yeah. And also about religion. Lots of interesting insights of being a gay Christian.
And the rapture.
And the rapture. I'm Fausto Furnos.
And I'm Mark Villian.
Stay tuned.
And my eyes begin to linger longer than they should. I should go before I lose my sense of reason. And this hour holds more meaning. I should go, baby, I should go. Oh, but now I don't mean to leave you with a trivial excuse. And when you call tomorrow, I don't know what to do. But I should go.
Hi, Levi.
Yes.
Hey, it's Fausto.
And Mark from the Feast of Fools podcast. How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Are you comfortable?
Am I comfortable? I'm completely comfortable. Okay. How about you guys? Anything? Want to get you some coffee?
Yeah, if you would, please. That'd be great.
So your brand new album is fresh out. It's called One of the Ones.
Yes.
And can you explain to me why that title for your album?
Well, you probably have an idea already if you've listened to the entire album, seen the insert, and know that each song is dedicated to a different
guy. Oh, it's on heavy rotation on my iPod. Yeah, but what? So, like, does this guy that you dedicated the album to, is he like going, you know, are you sort of like Carly Simon saying, do you probably think this song is about you, and you're right?
And you're right, yeah. But each song is a different guy.
Oh.
And
I didn't pick up on that.
It's not that I necessarily dated every one of them, but these are guys that have like touched my life in one way or another, whether they have been someone I have fallen madly in love with, close friend with, crushed on, or dated for a time. These are guys that, you know, these songs were directly inspired by each a different guy.
So then the next album is going to be songs about restraining orders put upon you?
Let's hope not.
Or so your fans.
But I have sent out an alarm amongst all the single gay men. They know now if they date me that all their shit's going to be hanging out for everyone to listen to. Because
ooh. So you're kind of...
You better not get around me unless you want a song written about you airing all your dirty laundry.
Well, it sounds like you're a little bit like the exact opposite of your tour mate, Eric Hyman. We are on the world tour with, who is very proud of his. How would you describe that, Fausto?
Well, see, you're working very closely with Eric, right?
Yeah, Eric's actually right here.
Oh,
go.
Okay, don't tell him.
Don't go right now.
Don't tell him we're talking about him. Okay. So Eric says that on his website that he travels 250 days of the year, right?
Something like that.
You know, and that was one thing that actually. I noticed first off about getting to know Eric Hyman as a singer-songwriter 2 years ago. The fact that he was on the road like 20 to 25 dates a month was really inspiring for me and kind of made that a goal for myself.
Well, on his website, Levi, he says that he doesn't do one-night stands while he's on the road. So I say, well, that's an awful lot of many nights with a cold shower.
Uh-huh.
So, true. So either A, he likes to take a lot of cold showers, or B, he's lying.
Well, you're going to have to ask him directly.
No.
We want the dirt from you.
I can say, of all of my friends, though, this one right here is probably a lot more upstanding and together than a lot of others that I know.
Hey, just because you're a slut does not mean you're upstanding or not
together. Yeah, or downstanding.
Well, I agree with you, being that I would like to feel that I have a sense of integrity myself.
Well, you're
well,
a fine,
our question, I guess.
Fine Southern. You're a fine Southern Baptist sissy, right?
Absolutely, born and bred.
So you were born and bred in Nashville, Tennessee?
Or East Tennessee?
Actually, Oliver Springs, Tennessee, which is a little town outside of Knoxville. Very small town. There were five of my graduating class.
Wow.
And you were a child musical prodigy, because I was reading about an interview with you that when you finished your kindergarten graduation, you went home, and what did you do to impress your parents?
I felt compelled to sit down and pick out Pump and Circumstance, both hands, and I had my brother working the pedals underneath me.
How old were you when this happened?
6 years old.
6 years old, so you're barely forming sentences.
Yeah.
And yet you were doing chords and melody on the piano.
A little melody with other little counter melody stuff going on in the left hand, yeah. And of course, Momsy and Popsy had to run over and immediately put me into school. And so
you were like a gay Beethoven baby.
With a white head.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so, and they sent you to school. So did your parents ever envision the kind of music that you're making today, or were they thinking like more of a classical training for you, or...?
Well, they were actually very supportive with getting me really good training as far as my piano development was concerned. They had me at Vanderbilt University. I had a full scholarship
at
Vanderbilt University under a pre-college program that I did my sophomore, junior, and senior year of college. I mean, of high school, I'm sorry. So I went towards my college credit to do those classes. And they were fascinating with the way they just kept me expounding upon my musical education. Even when it came to songwriting seminars and performance seminars and all sorts of stuff, they just kind of really inundated me with all the information that I could possibly sponge.
Were your parents musicians?
No, I kind of am the only musician in my family. I don't really know where the gene came from. It's kind of random, but to answer your question, yeah, they did kind of expect that I would go into the Christian music world and kind of live vicariously through me. My mother did anyway.
So they wanted you to be like, oh, holy night, that sort of thing, yeah. Like a Burl Ives.
Well, not necessarily a Bing Crosby cover artist, but perhaps, you know, they definitely wanted me to continue what I had started doing every weekend by the time I was 12 years old, which was, you know, go to a different church, you know, sing and play the piano, preach a sermon, have an altar call, win souls to Christ, and on to the next city.
Because,
you know?
Music in the church is very, very
Baptist
important,
church.
Especially in the Baptist church. I think in all churches it can be very important, except for the ones that hate music. But I think in the Southern experience is that a lot of the good music comes out of the church.
Absolutely.
Is he still there?
Hello, Levi?
We lost him.
Levi? Oh, damn it.
Because he was saying something.
I was like, is that a question, girl? Okay, what else?
Hello?
Levi.
We lost
hey.
You.
It's the terrorists. The Department of National Security disconnected us.
We were talking. We were beginning to threaten the religious riot movement.
The status quo. Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of which, you were in a very conservative Christian college as a young gay man, right?
Yeah, Belmont University happened to have been the primary college to go to for music business. You know, it was a staple in Nashville, Tennessee, and a lot of people from Ben Skill and Trisha Yearwood have come out of Belmont University. Certainly, a lot of the Christian music artists have gone to school there. Brad Paisley, you know, was one of my guitar players at the time I was going mm-hmm. to Belmont University. You know, it's those worlds collide. So, you know.
Now, you actually checked yourself into Exodus, which is a sort of like a, in essence, a sex change program, but instead of your gender, it's your sexuality, right?
What is this about some sort of...
This is how I define Exodus.
What?
Instead of getting a sex change for your genitals, you're trying to get a sex change for your sexuality. And so, like, it's Christian brainwashing camp for gays.
That's quite a harsh way to put it. I do say that it is a harsh reality. It certainly was for me. Now, you know, I will respect the journey of other people in that. Apparently, it is the road that I know a couple of people have taken personally that I know of that is leading them to the truths they're meant to learn in this life, and good for them. It didn't work for me, though. I did check myself into Exodus International in junior high, though, behind my parents' back. I didn't want them to know. All that I knew was that this was something I felt I needed to do, that I felt God was calling me to do in order to be a, you know, to put it in Christianese terminology, a vessel for God.
So what kind of therapy did they have you do? I mean, did they electrocute you or just made you read a lot of Bible passages or?
Well, you know, fascinatingly enough, no, it wasn't electro.
Shock therapy.
I almost said electro stimulation.
Now that's what you're into now.
Hey.
Little clamps on the nipples.
It was an electroshock therapy, but isn't it fascinating to find that was actually, you know, up and running and a viable, you know, option to turn gays straight in what? Only 10, 15, 20 years prior to me going through this myself as a kid.
Oh, yeah. Lou Reed went through that.
You were in Exodus. What kind of therapy were you going through in order to change from being gay to being straight?
Well, you know, I was given workbooks, textbooks, and a support group. Without getting into the curriculum, it's been a long time, but I can pretty much say that it based itself on the fact that sexuality is kind of environmentally influenced. Say, for example, you have an absent father. You hit adolescence, your need for that connection becomes eroticized, and therefore you find yourself liking men of the same sex. All in all, at the end of the day, psychologically, spiritually, it just wasn't adding up to me. And found that most of the guys who said they were healed was actually, you know, having, like, you know, successful suppression most of the time, but nobody was walking away in the name of Jesus claiming a hard-on over a woman.
Oh my God, that's a story. But so you checked in behind your parents' back. Was it like a summer camp, or you would go after school? What was that program like?
No, I actually decided I would change churches. So every Sunday and every week I would see the guy, the counselor, and I just picked up and moved to a different church so that I could actually say, oh, I just like this church better because I'm starting to believe more in a Pentecostal way rather than a Fundamental Baptist way and be filled with the Holy Spirit. In the meantime, I'm also, going to, check in with the Christian counselor guy so he can change me up and make me holy.
Well, wow. I mean, the coming out process for you sounds like it was kind of rough. I mean, you were kicked out of your dorm. And you had a Christian record company contract that you lost, right?
Exactly, yeah.
And so what was your reaction to that? I mean, to sort of being abandoned by your roommate, at least, and your... I mean, I don't know what your family was like, but were you angry? Were you upset? Or
I think probably what kept me from, at that point, turning my back completely on the concept of God was that it was the day of... having the meeting with the guy from the Christian record label, that I landed, after all the stuff I had gone through in the 6 years of the Christian counseling, and then finally coming to terms with, maybe this isn't right. And then I had a vocal coach who looked at me one day after she had seen me for months, completely distraught and lost and not knowing what on earth by this time, after 6 years of being so committed to God and him doing nothing to save me from this thorn in my side, she looks at me and she says, have you ever thought that God perhaps thinks you're absolutely perfect the way that you are?
I certainly know a lot of old men probably think that.
A lot of young men, too.
Well,
you're very handsome.
But so there was never a time that you felt like, I probably, this is the wrong religion for me, or maybe there's something wrong with this religion and not with me?
Well, exactly. There was a point in time when I came to that, and for me it was just deciding to redefine what that meant for myself. So the moment that he's saying, we're going to let you go from this label for what we heard, I have, first of all, he just flat out asked me a question. It's the first time I'd ever admitted that I was gay. He said, okay, we have gotten word from an intern at our label that this is what happened at the college and da-da-da-da-da. Are you gay? And I sat there in this pregnant pause thinking, okay, you know what? After these 6 years of Christian counseling and all this stuff that I've just been talking about, I just took a deep breath and I was like, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm gay.
And was there sort of, because you were told also lying is a sin, right? So there was a sort of a contradiction there, is that if you lied about who you were, you were screwed either way.
Well, but in when you're in that particular belief, when you believe a certain way, you're not lying. You're just claiming who you are in Christ.
Mm-hmm.
You actually see yourself as gay. You see yourself as straight with temptations that you're fighting against. So it's not really an issue of lying if you were to say, I'm not gay. Because really, in the eyes of God, when you're in that mentality, you're not gay. You're just being swayed.
And so when you came out to him right then there on the spot, he was just like, what was his reaction? He just said...
I was lucky. I had one of the guys who did this, whose job it was to come to me and end my relationship with the label, ended up being a wonderful friend of mine. He thought that there was an inherent injustice involved in the whole circumstance and was kind of on my side. He kind of came to me in a demeanor that suggested, look, I don't necessarily like that I'm having to do this, but you know what? I wanted to do it myself because I wanted to be the one to tell you. I don't have a... These are not his words, but I know now that this is what his feelings were. I don't have a problem with who you are, but I know who I work for, and I would rather be the friend that comes to you and says, let's just deal with this and move forward. So he was actually really sweet. I never really got to be in contact anymore with all the others that were kind of behind him, the label,
So what was your experience in seeing the Del Shores Southern Baptist Sissies for the very first time in the audience?
Well, explain what it is. I'm not really
sure. Can you sort of tell people what Southern Baptist Sissies is, first of all?
Yeah, Southern Baptist Sissies is a play that was written and directed by Del Shores, who you may know from the movie Sordid Lies. It follows the story of four boys in the Baptist church in Texas, and how they all individually deal
with their passion for God as opposed to feeling like they're an abomination to God because of being gay. You know, and each boy deals with it completely different than the other. It was funny because in my years of dealing with it, I kind of felt like I had phases of each boy. So, you know, hearing words come out of this dialogue or these monologues that these boys would talk about, you know, during the play were, you know, verbatim things that I had said in my own personal life. I found myself like, you know, when you get to this point sometimes when you're just like uncontrollably crying and you're really trying to shut it down because, you know, everyone within a 5-mile radius is noticing nothing but how hysterical you are. That's exactly how it was for me, because I had never until that moment realized that there were other people out there like me. Other people that had, for instance, slept on the opposite side of their bed with their windows open so that they could watch the sky as they fall asleep, reminding themselves that the rapture could come at any moment, and if they had had, like, this dirty thought that they went to bed about some other guy, they would go straight to hell. You know, hear the train go by. We had a train close by to the station, to our house growing up. And that thing would come, you know, come barreling through in the middle of the night. I'd bolt up out of bed, you know, thinking I've missed the rapture. I'm a goner. I thought about, you know, I had a dream about, you know, Travis Walls, the preacher's son, you know, but that is a very real fear that, like, was, you know, a really heavy weight to bear as a boy, you know, for years. And to see that very situation that I explained to you actually be depicted in the play was the breaking point for me, because I thought, like, something so specific as of that I did, you know, you thought, God, are there really other country boys out there who did that? Yeah. And you find out that Benny in the play, it describes it just as I described it to you.
So the rapture is a, can you define for the us non-Christians, what is exactly the rapture? Is God taking all the good people of the earth and bringing them to heaven?
Yeah, basically it's the concept that Jesus Christ will return, and all those who have received him as his personal savior, who are saved, who are living their life for him, will be swept up and taken to heaven, and thus will begin the end times.
So you've also made...
So you really believe that, so every time you heard like a big sound, you thought, okay, this is it. This is it. Was like
four horsemen of the apocalypse.
It was like the day after for us kids that grew up with a nuclear age, I guess. Is every time you went to bed and you heard a boom, you're like, oh, those are nuclear weapons. But for you, it was Jesus. I mean, nuclear weapons, Jesus, about the same thing, right?
Not exactly.
No. But, no?
I don't know how to answer that yet.
You don't have to. So, Levi,
you felt like the end was here and you were going to be taken to heaven. And if you didn't think the right thing, you're fucked forever.
No, let me put a level of seriousness on this here. This is the reason why we have things like the Trevor Project and other things where there are people personally that I have known that have gone to commit suicide because of the seriousness of how they receive what the church is giving them as kids. And then they come around and find that this self-deprivation that they are having to live through every single day of their life is something they can't take anymore. So it is crazy to me to see that I'm still getting email after email from people all over the country who are telling me, I'm 19 years old, I can't deal with this, my dad's a preacher, and, you know, talking about suicide attempts, how do they come to terms with who they are? This is hard, I think, for people outside of the Christian world to understand, as, you know, people who have not been exposed to how serious this gets, but it is an issue that, especially for me now coming out, me now telling my story, that I have been inundated with the stories of young men all over the country who even today are still dealing with this and who are, you know, are attempting to take their lives. I mean, there's a level of seriousness that really should be left.
So what do you advice do you have for them when they approach you? I mean,
for me, it is like my goal beyond anything to help them realize that exactly the way they are, they're absolutely perfect, that God is within them, that they are absolutely perfect the way they are, and that there's nothing that God will do but love them.
Well, that's a beautiful sentiment, and I understand it is a serious problem. You know, we do get emails here at the Feast of Fools from time to time from young people struggling to come out, and when you put that religious aspect to it,
the burden of the
Almighty God as you as the sinner, it can be a lot for young people. So I'm glad that they have somebody like you out there that they can reach out to them.
Yeah, and by no means do I mean to come across as someone who's also a flag-waving gay Christian. I don't even adhere to the Christian theology anymore. But
you understand.
Hopefully that message of love crosses all sorts of boundaries and barriers that can really, you know, hopefully provide something these kids can latch on to.
So you're close friends with Del Shore.
Uh-huh.
Shores. So what's your friendship with him like now today? Because you actually helped contribute music for that play, right?
Yeah, I after seeing the play 36 times.
Wow.
I kind of decided by then that was the period on the end of that experience for me. I was able to really kind of resolve a lot of the pain growing up of what, you know, we've been previously discussing. It's become the theme song for the play, and in turn the theme song for the movie that's coming out. They're shooting for next year, I think the spring.
Maybe. Are you going to be in the movie?
I don't know yet. Del throws me into all sorts of things.
Oh, Del. Del, if you're listening. Well, I think, you know, I think I want to really point out that I think it's really important for us as gay men to re-educate ourselves.
Right.
You know, and I think, like, seeing a play over and over again, so really the message of that work sinks in, is so important, don't you think?
It is, because especially it takes a lot of time to reprogram yourself, you know, reprogram the way you think on a day-to-day basis about the value of who you are and about your worthiness, you know, your godness, your own divine self that you are, which is how I believe now. After years, yeah, absolutely. I think that to come to, you know, to continue to come back to a source like that is really important. It was for me anyway. I mean, it really did help me kind of start over in my head.
Right. And so you've done a lot of some film work and some television work. You were on The Apprentice. What did you do on The Apprentice?
Oh, I was, when did that air? November 17th was when the two teams had a task where they were to take an unsigned singer-songwriter and write a song, record it, produce it, and present it to radio executives. And from there on, XM Radio would decide which artist, which song was more compatible with their cafe format. So I had gotten the gig because each team had a songwriter and producer of their own, kind of to serve them as a sounding board for them. I mean, they were supposed to write and record and produce the songs themselves, the team themselves. But this particular producer on this team happened to be the producer I was working with when at the time I was signed to Atlantic Records last year. So he got me, you know, he submitted me to Mark Burnett Productions, and a couple of months later they called me, and bam, we just went in, and it was 36 hours of wins, and I ended up helping my team win, and because of that, XM Radio began to put our song in rotation on XM Cafe, and they debuted my new album, which we're talking about now, one of the ones. And has been really supportive ever since.
Well, I'm interested. Did you ever consider like auditioning for American Idol? Because you could be somebody who could win, you know, that contest.
Yeah, you know, if I had a nickel for every time
someone said that
to me,
I mean, I would never have to sing again. And I've thought about that before, but you know, I quite honestly, I think the reason probably why I never have done that was for the same reason that I was about even doing The Apprentice, because you never really know how you're at the end of the day, how America is going to perceive you. And I always wanted to be so guarded about, you know, trying to, you know, make my craft as integral on a musical end as possible. And
but you're actually out of the closet as a gay musician, and you're sort of pursuing a mainstream music career. I mean, what do you think when you hear about news about someone like Clay Aiken, who's sort of still wrestling with these ideas and
allegedly wrestling?
I mean, what would advice would you give someone like him?
God, you know, that it just breaks my heart, because I know where he is. I know that, you know, being whatever he is, 21 years old. You know,
was he actually 28?
No, he's 23.
So 23.
He's allegedly 23. I don't know.
I thought he was a lot older.
Allegedly Clay.
Allegedly Clay.
No, but you know, I have to feel for him, because you know he's got this huge machine behind him who's pushing him to you know keep the money rolling in. And the poor boy, the minute he stepped onto that show, I'm sure, you know, had not had all these grand, you know, answers to all these problems he, you know, had not confronted yet with his sexuality or whatever, allegedly. We don't know. But I can't help but just feel for him. You know, I hate that people can be insensitive to his journey so much to, like, you know, spread, you know, put shit in papers and, you know, and kind of, you know, out him.
But he's a celebrity. It's the nature of celebrity these days.
It's going to, in the long run, make him a better person.
Do you think all the American Idol winners should go see a therapist? I mean, that's if I was running that contest, I would
go to therapy for a little while.
We could all bet.
I may not even be through myself.
But I think, like, especially, you know, because a lot of these people are just sort of, I mean, from the record producers aspect, they're taking these ingenues, right?
Right.
Right.
And they're thrusting them into this breakneck pace. And I think that's part of the fascination with that program.
Right. Well, these people, they don't even know themselves yet.
They don't know who they are.
They don't know who they are. And they're kind of slowly discovering it. And then, you know, they get a lot of attention from lots of hot men. And who can resist it? So, speaking of hot men.
Well, you know, it is true because, I mean, I've been through 12 different labels. I mean, I've been, you know, from Desmond Child to Tim Devine to David Foster, all these guys. But, you know, along the process, I've been, you know, pushed into the whole world of trying to be made the, you know, the lead singer to, like, a really cute Radiohead-ish kind of band, or a boy band, or like the whole blue-eyed soul thing where I was doing, like, full-on hip-hop R&B stuff. You know, I've been pushed in so many directions myself that really, until now only, do I know myself so intimately that I can just be able to say, look, y'all, this is who I am. You know, I think it takes a long time to get to that place, I think.
Well, it's a nice problem to have.
yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. And so, Levi, you were also in the movie Frailty, which was directed by Bill Paxton, and you had the opportunity to work with Bill Paxton and
from Big Love on HBO,
one of our sponsors of this show, and and Matthew McConaughey. And did you get to see Matthew McConaughey in his dressing room?
Yeah, did you get to play the bongo drums with him naked?
No and no.
Oh,
did you want to?
Well, you were pretty young in that film, though, right? I mean, because that movie came out what, 4 or 5 years ago?
I think it was like, I think I did it like 4 years ago. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
So, what was your experience like making like a feature film?
Well, it was you know, I was speechless by the time I sat down finally and beside Matthew McConaughey, and we were doing our camera tests, that sort of thing, and they were kind of like doing some screen tests, Matthew and then the two guys who played the younger versions of us. So I'm kind of like literally shoulder to shoulder with them, and you know, personally, you guys, I had like collected like articles of him and had this big dorky crush on Matthew McConaughey, right?
Aww.
All of a sudden I'm beside of him and I can't look him in the eye, you know.
So when he was kissing you, you sort of had to,
you had to close your eyes.
Well, find me a gay man that doesn't dream about being in bed with Matthew McConaughey, you know, because this is the thing, is like in that movie Contact with Jodie Foster. You know, Jodie Foster's a lesbian because, like, she gets out of bed to go do her astronomy work a naked Matthew McConaughey in the bed. Now, what kind of normal person would do that, you know?
I don't know, but I would love for you to describe in great detail exactly what a normal morning for you would be in that situation.
Oh, honey.
With Mike Mahoney, I wouldn't get out of bed all day.
Honey, I'd be like ordering a meat lover's pizza, bringing it in. I was like, I will do whatever it takes to please that man. And Matthew, if you're listening, the offer is always standing. But you have to ask permission from my husband, Jake Gyllenhaal, and Mark Fillion, too.
Nicely done.
So was it a good experience for you? I mean, were you able to overcome your shyness with him or your crush to be able to work with him?
I mean, you know, he totally broke the ice himself. I mean, it was apparent. The conclusion of that story is he just kind of basically looked at me and just kind of chuckled and, like, put his arm on my shoulder and was like, hey, man, I just totally realized that he needed to help me out with this. so he was really cool from that moment forward, you know.
So when I meet him, I should be
enough to have, like, at least gotten broken into the whole world of being on set from doing an independent film that I had done, one of the leads. We had won a couple film festivals from it and had gotten kind of familiar enough with that world to where it wasn't completely a completely a shock to, you know, be thrown into that situation, but it was definitely a highlight of my life so far. I worked with Bill Paxton and Matthew McConaughey.
What was Bill like?
Really, like, paternal. He was kind of like an older brother in a way, you know?
So he wasn't like a bully, the older brother bully in Weird Science? Like, he wasn't yelling at you and stuff? Or you remember that movie, don't you? That was Bill Paxton turned into a giant slug at the end of the movie.
I about a greasy pork sandwich and a dirty ashtray.
So
your music's been playing on the soap operas, right? Lately, I've been reading from your website. You've been having some play on the...
Yeah, I've got an interview with Soap Opera Digest in a couple of hours.
Wow. So you're going to join the ranks of Christopher Cross with the Think of Laura song and the Patty Austin and James Ingram, Baby Come to Me. Because those, you know, soap operas made those songs, you know?
God, well, hey, you know, I guess you won't have to grab me by the arm and drag me kicking and screaming.
And that's I Should Go is the theme that they're playing these days on Days of Our Lives.
Yeah, I Should Go is the one that Days of Our Lives picked up, and then last Friday, Young and the Restless used Hardly a Hero.
Oh, okay.
So my goal now is to contact every soap opera across the country and see if I can't get every song placed on a soap.
Wow. You'd be in the Guinness Book of World Records.
Yeah. Let's see. I was going to say, like, for a gay man on soap, well, find me a straight man to music that's on a soap opera. So you're
wait,
touring?
Wait.
Yeah?
Didn't the guy who sang Rick Springfield, I mean, didn't he do music before soap?
Like I said, find me a straight man whose music's been
on. I don't think they played Jesse's Girl on soap opera or on General Hospital.
He was on the show.
He was on the show, but I don't think that was really part of the show.
See, right. If you're gay, they put your music. If you're straight, you're acting in front of the lens. But for you, you're a quadruple threat. I don't know what the fourth thing that you do is, but I'm sure
good.
I'm sure it's wonderful. Now you're traveling around the country.
I can introduce you to the big number four.
All right. Well, you'll be in Chicago when?
When are we in Chicago? Do you know?
April 1st, I think.
April. Okay.
That's April 1st.
Yeah.
Oh.
I'm like checking with Eric.
You know, that's the that's the 9-year anniversary of the Feast of Fools.
Really? Show.
Yes. And one thing. Well, honey, you can always stay with me. There's plenty of room over here.
Well,
now, where are you guys
going? I don't want to kick McConaughey out.
You know, McConaughey is just going to have to wait his turn.
Sick of him jonesing it.
I know. He's kind of obnoxious because he walks around naked all the time. He's like, man, that's what God meant you to be naked. I said, honey, it is Chicago. It's cold. Put on some clothes. Seriously. Now, you have your own, you started your own record label finally after being with, you know, a quadrillion other record labels. What made you want to do that? Or
I just got tired of waiting around for people to get it.
Mm-hmm. Do you think sort of like the trend in music today is that so many, because of so many wonderful resources like the internet and podcasts and that things are just more accessible to people, do you think that people need major record labels anymore?
Yeah, absolutely not. Matter of fact, I feel like those guys don't even know where the industry's going. I mean, what to do? You know, I mean, they're hashing out the same shit that I don't know any of my friends even listen to FM radio anymore. It's top 40. I mean, I don't know. I mean, and we live in a completely new, different age now. You know, you've got the World Wide Web that gives you access to everyone across the country, and you know, a little education in how to do that. You've already got step one of the process. You know, how to distribute your album, cause traffic to your website. You know, and there's so many avenues you can use, especially like you said, podcasts and you know, that to sit around and wait for some guy, you know, some monkey in a suit to come along and get it. Why do it? We don't need it no more.
No, yep, but true. Tell us how you really feel, though, Levi. Now, so you're right now, if people want to check you out, you're going to be in what city
in the next
week?
Days.
Next few days? Or
we're in San Diego tonight, Long Beach tomorrow night, Los Angeles on Sunday night, and then we're heading to Sacramento, San Francisco for next week.
All right.
And this was taped Thursday, March 16th. So,
So if someone comes up, and you're approachable after your show, right? You're just hanging out there, shaking hands with people. You don't go like, no pictures, please.
No. I don't like, you know, have an entourage that
blocks you.
Puts me back to the green room after I play.
So people can get to, and you're single, right?
CDs and talking to people.
I'm encouraging stalkers on you. I hope you don't mind. But it's like, so you're a single gay man?
Yeah, I am.
Okay, people.
So what's if there's a hot gay guy that's going to come to the concert, how is he going to impress you?
Yeah.
And get your attention?
That's a really good question, because he can't be obvious or too direct.
Yeah, it's like in a sense, like we're setting him up to fail.
How about if he mentions the the podcast?
Yeah, if he mentions the Feast of Fools podcast, is that a turn on? It's like, I read about you on an TV guide. And you're like, what?
You treat our fans with respect.
Respect them. Give them love. Love me. Now, the album is, again, one. It's called One of the Ones.
Yeah.
And it's a collection of songs written about your ex-lovers. And the last
friends.
Song, and friends. And there's a song called Man Out of Me.
Yeah.
Which sort of ends the album, which we'll be playing at the end of the show. Talk about the relationship in that song. I mean, who's the maniacal, certifiable person in that you sing about? I mean, but without saying the name, but
the message from him yesterday.
You did?
Yeah.
Is he mad?
I don't know that he's heard the song, to be honest with you.
He doesn't realize it's
a
song.
He doesn't know.
So
I mean, I'm sure if he's heard the album, he knows it's about him.
So, I mean. I would love to write an album about all my ex-boys. I think every gay man wants to do what you're doing, you know?
I can't lie. There's some satisfaction involved. Absolutely. You know, but to kind of extend, let's turn the page to the next chapter following our whole conversation about being, you know, off the label, out of college. The next chapter begins with meeting this guy that we're talking about. And my first relationship, I was 20, and turned out that he was an abusive alcoholic. And, you know, I had not really begun my road of even learning what it meant to love myself enough to not be caught in something like that. I didn't even know what to think of it. I couldn't even process the situation that I had found myself in. And it turned out that that's exactly how my mom found out about me being gay.
He called her up drunk? He called her and was like, Levi's a fag.
No, she would come and visit us in Nashville, and she began to put it together and confronting me about it.
So what did your mom say? And how are your parents sort of like embracing you today? Or
I think they were making some real good progress in embracing me in general as a gay man until I decided I would come out professionally. And now that's a whole new can of worms they're trying to deal with.
Oh, Levi.
Well, and we're talking, you know, regularly, every day, making progress.
Levi, it took my family 10 years, and they're the nicest people in the world. And they were like saying, you're going to be seen like a Michael Jackson. That's I mean, I have some hysterically funny letters of my dad giving me professional advice about telling me not to be gay, you know. That's the only time my dad ever talked about it with me. It's like, otherwise he couldn't care less, you know.
I hope you kept those.
Oh, I have them.
Wow.
Yeah. Also doesn't throw anything away.
I don't throw anything away. I'm a
packer. That's awesome. That is awesome that you have those.
And he's like, he's talking about, well, I don't know, it's a lot. But this
is about you.
This is about me. But I'm telling you, it took you a long time to come to terms with who you are, you know, and I think that for all gay men and women out there, it's like, it's going to take your parents almost as long to come to terms with you. Even if they say they're over it or they embrace you, deep down inside, they're still struggling, you know? I mean, because they all want kids, you know? And they're like, and so they see you as a gay man, they're going to be like, oh, I'm not going to have any grandchildren, you know, or something silly like that.
It's true. As much as I hate you saying it this way, it's true to say. It's kind of a death to them of sorts.
Well, I'm not saying it's a death. It's just saying that they don't have, you know, grandparents have this sick, straight people, let me put it, who had kids, have this sick fetish with babies. My mother,
you're
she's
so
like,
crazy.
She sees a baby and she's just like, oh, oh, isn't that cute? Oh. I mean, my mother will be in the worst mood, and you show her a photograph of a mother and a child, and it makes her happy.
Let's get back on subject.
So, I mean, do you ever see yourself as a... So I'm going to ask you the question your parents want to know is, do you ever see yourself as a father
in the future? Would I see myself as a father?
Yeah.
Yes, I do, but not for a time. I think we have kids way too early in our society these days.
Well, my father had me when he was 65, 64. So you never...
In actuality, if he really had you that late, he probably was just getting into his prime as far as being able to raise you with wisdom.
Well,
yeah. I don't know about that, Levi. I don't know about that at all.
There's a great passage in Conversations with God that talks about how, you know, so many of our 30s and 40s, we're still trying to figure ourselves out, let alone be able to, like, raise kids. It's acceptable because that's what's happened for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, but... You know,
yeah, I have to agree with you.
Where they
yeah.
used to, like, you know, the grandparents used to raise the kids, and we younger folks used to run around and just make babies.
Well, make it takes a village. So.
You know, yeah, but babies don't live, thank God. Well, Levi, we've had such a great time with you on the phone.
It's been a
yeah,
delight.
It's been a blast.
Give my ex-boyfriend, Eric Hyman, a big kiss for me.
I will do that.
Give him some love, because, you know, 250 nights without any sex is a lot of nights. It's a long night. So, if he nudges you in the middle of the night, you know what you got to do.
No. Oh, I'm not touching that. It's football.
I'm just planting the seed there, you know, because I know the audience is, you know, you guys are traveling together.
You're both very attractive.
Yeah. See people speculate about that, huh?
Oh, Jesus, sure. Of course they are, you know? I mean, they're sitting there in the audience. They're like, I'm sure the question in their mind is like, who's the top? You know, we're gay and we're sexualized more than sometimes we feel comfortable being sexualized, I think. Don't you think? Or
yeah, I mean, I've always been on the other side of things where I am a little more outspoken than the next guy. So I'm so comfortable with that, but...
Well, you're a lovely person, and we absolutely adore your music, and we wish you nothing but success.
And hopefully we'll see you here in Chicago on April 1st. And
we'll try to get you in the house.
Tell Eric to stop by.
Well, you get in contact with us. Definitely come by.
Thank you, Levi. Take care. Again, the album is One of the Ones.
One of the Ones, and then get it on levichrist.com.
Or you can buy it on feastofools.net. It's on sale.
Oh, CD baby.
On sale right now, people. You can buy it. And his website is Levi Christ, and with two S's.
No, one S.
One S. Oh, sorry. One S.
Yeah. Levikreis. It almost sounds like a swear word. Yeah. Your name. It's like Levi Christ, like you stub your toe and
Levi Christ. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you
so much. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
It has
so much.
Been a pleasure. Thank you and good luck. Bon voyage.
Thank you. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Levi Christ is touring the country with Eric Hyman, and a fabulous tour.
They're going all over, 50 different spots in 53 days.
Yeah, so you can go to his website and through our website, feastoffools.net, and you can buy his album, and I am Fausto Fornos, and we're going to be leaving you here with a little bit of Man Out of Me from his album, One of the Ones,
yeah,
where he talks about a boyfriend being maniacal.
I know.
And certifiable.
We should all do stuff like that, other ex-boyfriends.
And we also want to remind you that the Feast of Fools podcast is brought to you by Big Love, a bold new dramatic series from HBO, which tells the story of a polygamist balancing the needs of his three wives, their seven kids, and their three new houses.
The all-star cast includes Bill Paxton, Gene Triplehorn, Chloe Savini, Jennifer Goodwin, and Harry Dean Stanton.
Big Love, Sundays 10 p.m., 9 central, immediately following The Sopranos, only on HBO. And also The Feast of Fools is sponsored by people like you.
Thank you so much for your support, and thank you, everyone. Please donate to our New York City Travel Fund. We're going to bring these bitches to the,
Big Apple.
And who knows, maybe if this is successful, we'll be in your hometown next.
Yeah.
So let's keep this ball rolling.
And the best way to help us is to give us some big love by linking to us on your blog. Spread the Feast of Fools gospel by showing your friends how to download, listen, and enjoy the show. It is your responsibility. So stand up, step up,
be counted.
Now when you evangelize,
proselyze. And please let us know what you think of Levi Christ and his music. You know, please comment on the website at feastoffools.net. We'd love to hear what your opinion is about the interview. And
if you
want to
see
music,
more hotties like Levi Christ,
show the love.
Show the love, people. I'm Fausto Furnos.
I'm Mark Fillion.
Thank you so much for listening.
Bye-bye.
Soon became a humble home, wrecked with animosity. Took it to the bottle, and then turned around and took it out on me. And I was just a boy, a scrawny little boy, a naive, faggot little boy. I love to leave, to abuse by you to see that you were maniacal, certifiable. It's comical when I'm looking back. I see you've made a man out of me. Life has been so good to me, taught me things about the soul. If pain is just an error in thought, then I'm in full control. Glad I started long ago, learning in the hardest way. So now I know my power, and that bullshit would never fly today. Just a boy, shelter little boy. I let you own that little boy. Might have been too young to see, but look what you made of me. 'Cause you were a little like a clone, certifiable. When I'm looking back, I see you made a man out of me.